BBC Radio 2, this is The Bob Harris Show, and it always is such a pleasure to share a studio with Chuck Prophet.
Oh, thank you.
It's good to see you, Chuck. As always. The new album, I remember visiting San Francisco in the 70s. I went there many times, and I love the atmosphere of the city. And one of the things that struck me immediately about it was that there was a kind of, I don't know, European atmosphere to it, more so in San Francisco than most American cities.
Well, I suppose. I mean, it's a diverse place and a very liberal town, and people come from all over, so it's got that kind of feel. A lot of people compare it to New Orleans. I don't know. I've been there so long, I don't know what to compare it to.
It's got a fantastic musical heritage.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just been a place where people have always been encouraged to wave their freak flags just as high and proud as they want, you know, on a lot of levels.
Why is San Francisco the sort of bastion of liberalism?
I couldn't tell you, really. I mean, it goes back to the Barbary Coast, I suppose, and it was a kind of a rough place, and I don't know. I mean, there's always been... I moved to San Francisco when I was about 19, and it kind of did a whammy to me, especially the first... when I was there, the punk rock was still happening, and it opened my eyes to the arts and film and gay culture and comedy and like indie films and, you know, just music. And so it's kind of an education. And there's, you know, the Beatniks and there's the City Lights and there's all these 17 different San Franciscos that all overlap. So I don't know. It's just, it's broken my heart many times, trust me. But it's never really letting me down in the end.
The new album's a homage to San Francisco. Isn't it, Chuck? Is that the right word for it?
It's like a tribute or sort of a love letter, maybe part love letter, part lover's quarrel. I don't know, but all I know is that when I started writing the songs for the record, that once we tapped into this kind of San Francisco thing, then it just started to flow and it got kind of fun. And I mean, every song on the record is about San Francisco. It's full of San Francisco characters, and it's also Google pure and Wikipedia free, and we got a lot of facts wrong. We've learned later about when things happened and who was involved, and we got Willie Mays in a song with Carol Doda and Jim Jones and people that he probably wouldn't want to be caught dead with. But yeah, so it's just a San Francisco inspired record.
Yeah,
that's the word I was looking for. Thank you. That's the short version.
Yeah. Well, we're going to hear three songs from the album during the course of the program tonight, and the first one is going to be...
Oh, this is Willie Mays is always swinging for the fence. Greatest center fielder that ever lived, Willie Mays. I hear the church bells ring. Willie Mays is up at bat. I hear the crowd go wild. All it did was touch his hat. Meanwhile, Carol Doda stood up and said, I won't be ignored. She showed him everything she had, then she showed him all a little more. Jim Jones and his temple on Gary Street, right next to young Bill Graham. Jim, he walked right up to Bill, clicked his heels, said, you know who I am. Meanwhile, Bugs and Daffy Duck were hitching up the coast to Pismo Beach. While over in the Tonkin Gulf, the Navy took a hit, or so it seemed. Sal said, please don't go, don't leave me here alone to make a stand. She looked so faded in the twilight, down there where the breakers meet the sand. Oh, and someone said to Laughing Sal, hey Laughing Sal, just what you laughing at? She said, I'm only laughing at myself. Keep it down, Willie's up in bed. It's all so long ago, there's always something else to be against. And the only thing we know for sure is Willie always did swing for the fence.
Stephanie Finch on vocals and James DePrato on guitar. Chuck Prophet, the song is called, I love this title, Willie Mays Up at Bat, and it's part of the new album Temple Beautiful, about which we'll be talking with Chuck more later on and hearing a little bit of music too from Green on Red. So now then, part two of our session with Chuck Prophet is coming up in a moment. As I was saying earlier, Chuck has a new album out called Temple Beautiful, which is a eulogy, really, for his hometown of San Francisco. More songs from that, more conversation with Chuck, and some music from his founding band, Green on Red. BBC Radio 2, and Chuck Prophet is here with me in the studio. Just introduce us to the musicians with you today, Chuck.
Absolutely. We've got James DePrato on the 18-string guitar. You can't see it, but it's a double neck guitar.
It's a fabulous guitar. Yeah. I love the look of it.
And that's Stephanie Finch singing, of course.
And the title of the album itself, Temple Beautiful, Chuck, takes its name from a very famous venue in San Francisco. Did you sort of gravitate towards the venue when you first got there?
Well, I remember when I was about 15 or 16, you know, me and some of my friends, we drove to this gig at the Temple Beautiful, which was a synagogue that originally was a synagogue that later became the home of the Jim Jones People's Temple. Long story there, not a very happy ending. And then it was sort of abandoned for a while, and these kind of enterprising promoters took it over for about a year and a half. And I learned all these things. I saw some shows there, like I saw Wall of Voodoo, Black Flag, The Mentors, and then closing the show were the Flamin' Groovies. Mm. You know, and I, you know, I mean, to see those bands in one night is incredible. And I remember driving home with my friends and thinking, like, you know, guys, I think we could do this. I mean, other than that, but before that, you know, before punk rock came along, it wasn't really, really impossible to think about having a band or, you know, or writing your own songs. And so, that kind of messed my head up, you know. And then later I was at a party a couple years ago, and I met one of the Flamin' Groovies. I'd seen Searle around for years, and I mentioned that show. He goes, well, yeah, they let us play because it was our PA, you know. But none of the punks liked us or whatever, you know. And they, apparently they bought that PA when they were here in England. They bought it off Pink Floyd. So he was very proud of that, too. So anyway, there's history everywhere. You
see,
just got to look.
Together,
yeah.
Does it? It really yeah. does.
But it was later bulldozed down, and now there's a post office there. And it's right next to, actually, to the Fillmore, the much more famous gig, Geary Street and Fillmore. Yeah.
And then, so having decided that, as it were, this was going to be the theme of the album, that you're going to write about San Francisco, Chuck, to what extent then did that, as it were, simplify and concentrate the writing process? Because themes always are great to tag things into.
Well, the thing is that, you know, a theme will emerge eventually. Sometimes the theme emerges maybe after you're done with the record and somebody says something. You say, yeah, I suppose that's what it was, you know. So, you know, we caught it early on. We had a batch. I was writing with my friend Kurt, and we had a batch of songs, and they just all kind of had that in common, you know. And then we had Temple Beautiful as a title, but, you know, it didn't really rhyme with anything. But it remained. So then, you know, then it was like, then she stood right next to me at the Temple Beautiful. We just started, you know, and then there were all these bits and pieces and 20-minute demos on the floor, and that kind of went on for like a year, you know. So it was fun. And then we thought about every fable, every myth has to have a hero, and we thought, who better than Willie Mays, the greatest center fielder that ever lived? He played for the San Francisco Giants. He stood up against racism, and he's been a very quiet guy. A lot of thick books have been written about him, and there's a huge statue of him at our ballpark. So we walk down there, you know, where my office sort of workspace is, that we don't have any internet. So it was cool because it was, you know, we later coined the term Google Pure. And so when it came time to write the Willie Mays song, we just walked down to where the statue is. We kind of stood there looking at it, and we're like, oh, yeah, he's a giant, you know. You know, that's all we could think of, you know. But we knew we had to have a hero. And so yeah, we just didn't know if he was going to come down from Olympus and, you know, grace us with a song. So we got one. So then it just started to be fun, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then it wasn't like, you know, really work or anything.
Have successive generations of San Francisco musicians had any, you know, has there been a sort of backlash to what happened in the 60s? I mean, I think sometimes in Liverpool, you know, half the city is so proud of the fact that the Beatles come from Liverpool, and the other half of the city is going, oh, come on, can you stop talking about the Beatles now? You know, is there that kind of thing in San Francisco?
Well, sure, everybody's got their own San Francisco, you know, and yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of tourism around, you know, Jerry and that period, and that didn't really mean anything to me. I mean, when I moved with my family, you know, to San Francisco, I mean, there were the White Night riots where Dan White was acquitted with manslaughter for killing, you know, gay rights activist Harvey Milk, and there was a riot, and there was a parade down Market Street, and people threw bricks into City Hall, and I mean, Jello Biafra ran for mayor and gave them a good run for their money, let me tell you, and on a campaign that all the businessmen would have to wear clown suits, and I mean, it was crazy, you know, it was good, and this stuff was on the nightly news, you know, I mean, you know, this stuff was like, it was real. And, you know, you got this guy in the 1800s, Emperor Norton, who declared himself the emperor of San Francisco, printed up his own money, and people honored it. They were proud to honor it. And if he ate in their restaurant, you know, they would have a plaque. And if there was an opera that opened, you know, there was always a seat reserved for this guy. Newspapers loved him. He was a real eccentric, you know. So that's also San Francisco, you know. Aside from the, you know, the hippies and Jerry and all that stuff, which is great too. I once met Jerry Garcia, great guy, shook my hand, felt like a catcher's mitt. That's all I can tell you. My friend was playing drums with him briefly, and I was kind of a scrappy guy, and he said, "You want to meet Jerry?" You know, and we went backstage, and nobody there, by the way, just his driver in a suit and, you know, with a black tie. And so they introduced me to Jerry. He got up off the couch and he said, "This is my friend Chuck, and he's a great guitar player. He's a singer songwriter." Jerry goes, "Oh man, that's all we need. Another one of those, man." And he just lit up a Lotar cigarette and shook my hand. And yeah, he was cool. But you know, there's more to San Francisco than the '60s and all that.
Exactly.
Stuff. Yeah,
and it's so spectacular to look at as a city as well, isn't it? I mean, obviously Steve McQueen and the car chases and stuff, but I mean, when I first got there, and there's really steep streets,
yeah,
and then how it levels out when at the intersection, and then you go down. It's so if you're driving down, it's like, yeah, boom, yeah, boom, isn't it? But it looks fabulous, and almost wherever you are in the city, you can see the bay, can't you? You can see the glittering of the sea.
Yeah, we've got all that Victorian architecture,
yeah,
which probably make you feel at home.
Yeah.
Well, we like it. Don't move there. Rent's high enough.
So when are you going to play for us next then, Chuck?
This is called The Left Hand and the Right Hand, and we wrote this about these guys, the Mitchell Brothers, who are San Francisco legends, And in a lot of ways, it started out as a song about them and really became a song about brothers. So we have to include Phil and Don and Phil and Dave for you Blasters fan. And then we thought of Dave and Ray and then the Gallagher brothers, too.
Yeah.
This is called The Left Hand and the Right Hand. The left hand and the right hand shared a cigarette. They were seen together everywhere, everywhere they went. And when you passed them on the street, they always took the time to wave hello. They stood up for each other the way true brothers do. And when the left hand lost the thumb, the right cut his off too. But no one can harmonize the way those brothers did. No. Don't tell me you don't want my love. Don't tell me you don't need my love. Don't tell me you don't want my love. Don't tell me you don't need my love. With separate checks, the next day bodyguards, and the years flew by like birds of prey. Not a single word between those two. Don't tell me you don't want my love. Don't tell me you don't need my love. Don't tell me you don't want my love. Don't tell me you don't need my love.
Left Hand and the Right Hand. Chuck Prophet here. It's another song from Temple Beautiful. And you're right, aren't you? I mean, it's amazing. Don and Phil, the first phase of the Everly Brothers' career ended on stage in a major fight between the two of them, didn't they?
What was it? At Knott's Berry's Farm in Buena Park. We're going to get into geography. I just thought I'd throw that in there.
But, you know, it's always been a bit volatile, isn't it? Noel and Liam Gallagher.
Absolutely,
and,
yeah.
And Ray and Dave Davis.
Well, you can't come between brothers, you know. Mm. I mean, you just, you know, you try, but they got their own thing going on. I mean, I see it with brothers all the time. I mean, personally, I grew up with three sisters, which probably goes to explain why I think I'm so great. Why does he think he's so great? He's insufferable.
So a final song then, Chuck.
Sure. When Steffi and I started singing, we took over a bar on 16th Street called the Albion. We took over the back room, me and some friends, and we used to play four sets a night. They would pay us $50. We would split it, and we just couldn't believe how lucky we were. So this record's got another duet. This is what we used to kind of be into, the Graham and Emmy Lou, Nancy Lee kind of stuff, and we're still trying to sneak into the group The group portrait. This one's called, let me get this right, it's called Little Girl, Little Boy.
That's right.
Yeah.
Get diseases and criminals make bail. Little girl, little girl.
Little boy, tell me something I don't know. What makes a lamp a Tiffany? What makes the flower grow?
Great stuff. Chuck Prophet here with us in the studio. And just a sort of final thought, because I want to play an old Green on Red song to round off the session, Chuck. And I still love Little Things in Life. I still just adore that record. Do you remember it was the moment of recording and all of that?
Absolutely. I remember that. Clearly, I remember this song. What happened was we were recording in Nashville. Al Kooper was producing. He left to go to like a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame kind of a thing, and he left us there alone, and so we kept recording, and also there were no drums, and they broke everything. It was like union guys, so when the guy left, there was no drums or anything, so it was just me and Dan. And there was a Dolly Parton session going on next door, and we brought a couple guys over, a bass player, and then a drummer played brushes on a cardboard box that you put tape in, a roll of tape in, and he put a tambourine inside the box. And Eddie Barris was the guy. I mean, he's kind of like played on 10 million number one records, this guy. And we did it. I mean, I remember we showed them the song, and this was like this is me learning the ropes in Nashville. We showed them, we got about halfway through the first chorus, and the drummer stopped, said, "So how are we going to end this thing?" Like, he didn't need to hear the rest, you know? and we cut it in one take. And then Al came back and he said, "Good work, kids, good work." And then we argued for like a week over what we were going to overdub, and eventually we settled on a glockenspiel. That was it. So the whole thing is us playing live, and one overdub was a glockenspiel.
Because necessity is the mother of invention, isn't it?
Just nothing seemed to work, you know, and then we went Buddy Holly with it.
I was just going to say that. Because, you know, all those different things, every day was thigh slapping, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Not Fade Away was a cardboard box. And I have to say, in this very studio, Russ Kunkel played percussion in that corner right over there using one of Ken Bruce's program boxes.
Well, that's rock and roll right there. That's even almost hip hop.
This is the very one.
Oh, there's the one. I like it. Oh, yeah. That's got tone.
There we go. But listen, I'm so pleased to see all of you. Thank you very much for being here.
Thanks for having us. It brightened our day.
And this is Green on Red.
Before I met you, baby, the little things in life just passing by.
For you.
great story. It's a great track. Green on Red, Little Things in Life from the 80s. And thanks again to Chuck Prophet. Wonderful session. In this hour, we heard The Left Hand and The Right Hand and Little Girl, Little Boy. And they're both on Temple Beautiful, which is out now. It's just released, in fact, on the Yep Rock record label.